Our first case for argument this morning is Tolliver v. Hulick. Mr. Viskovich.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Mr. Andry. May it please the Court. My name is David Iskowich with the Illinois Attorney General's Office on behalf of the respondent appellant in this case. This case is here on a decision by the District Court to grant habeas corpus relief on petitioner's claim that his right to confront eyewitness Samir Yunus was violated when the trial court precluded him from cross-examining Mr. Yunus about his immigration status in the United States. In order to show that Mr. Yunus was here purportedly illegally, the petitioner tendered two letters from the Immigration and Naturalization Service at trial. One of the letters, in response to his
purportedly, has anybody ever nailed that down?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You said purportedly illegal alien status. Has anybody ever definitively determined the status of that?
The answer to that is no, Your Honor. At trial,
I don't understand the procedure in this case. The normal rule when you seek to impeach somebody by extrinsic evidence is that you ask him, and then if he denies the extrinsic evidence, the extrinsic claim, the subject can't be pursued, but if he allows it, it can be. Now, I gather in this case, the defense counsel wanted simply to ask him, what's your immigration status?
That's correct, Your Honor.
The judge refused to allow that.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The judge refused to allow that even without the jury being there.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What conceivable basis would there be for refusing to allow that question when the jury wasn't in the room?
The trial counsel, Your Honor, had an opportunity to do so by simply asking to make an offer of proof. He didn't do this. All he had to do was say, Judge,
you can't make an offer of proof about something you don't know anything about. You make an offer of proof by saying, here's what we would prove if we were allowed to. But if you can't ask the witness the question, you can't know what your proof is.
Judge, the trial judge bent over backwards to give Mr. Yunus an opportunity to do
That's preposterous.
He said,
the trial judge committed an obvious error, and the big question is whether that error was prejudicial. But has there ever been any argument in either the state court or the federal tribunal that this subject is not material or relevant?
In the district court, Judge, I believe the respondent did not argue Brecht, but we do argue it in this court.
No. Brecht has to do with harmless error. I'm trying to figure out whether there's any other ground to say that there was no error. Was there any argument that this subject is not material? When I picked up these papers, my inclination was to say that if the man was an illegal alien, that would actually make his testimony more credible, because he actually came forward voluntarily in the end and put himself at risk. But everyone seems to be assuming the opposite. So have you ever argued that showing he's an illegal alien would help the prosecution?
I haven't, Judge, but I can offer one now.
It's too late now.
Hey, Judge.
One doesn't make up arguments at oral argument.
Okay, Judge.
We have to take it as given that the state is conceding. It's forfeited any entitlement to make any other argument that as a matter of federal constitutional law, this is indeed a materially relevant subject for cross-examination.
I've argued at length in the briefs that there was no federal constitutional violation with respect to the Confrontation Clause. The material that was sought to be introduced would have been harassing, would have confused the jury, and would have, therefore, fallen under those sorts of evidence or proofs that the Supreme Court has said do not need to be protected by the Confrontation Clause. With respect to the district court's finding that the letters did in fact show illegal immigration status, while that might be a reasonable conclusion to draw from those letters, the state trial court's opposite conclusion was similarly reasonable. And under 2254, that's all that matters.
That just gets me back to the first question I had. It just seems so silly to me that we don't know what his status is. If he is or is not an illegal alien at the time, maybe all this would have just gone away.
Judge, the petitioner had opportunities to put forth further proof at trial showing that he was, in fact, illegal by...
Why wouldn't the witness just be asked the question?
The trial judge said that I'm not going to let you ask the question in front of the jury, but the petitioner didn't...
The trial judge said he wasn't going to let him ask the question even not in front of the jury. That's the thing that gets my goat.
But, Judge, the petitioner had the opportunity to simply ask, well, Judge, let me put him on and make an offer of proof to preserve this for appeal. He didn't do this, Your Honor.
That's what he did. He asked for an opportunity to voir dire the witness outside the presence of the jury, and the state trial judge refused to let him do it.
Judge, my reading of the record is that there was no request for a voir dire or offer of proof. Now, if I'm wrong on that, I apologize, but my reading of the record is that the trial judge didn't allow them to do it in front of the jury when given the opportunity to bring in perhaps a person from the Justice Department or further affidavits, which the trial judge said, bring those in.
Something you can prove or disprove with people from ICE or the Department of Justice. All you can show is that the federal files are insufficient. The way you have to prove it is from Eunice. And that was the one thing the state judge was not going to allow.
Judge, the trial judge on the record said, bring me some more proof. Bring me something else. I'm not going to rely on these two letters standing alone. One of them says that there's no immigration status. The other one says that there's no records responsive to your request. This could have entailed a misnaming of Mr. Eunice in the application process. INS might have...
It entailed the fact that he was a citizen of the United
States.
That's
true, Your Honor. And
we
therefore
come back to the question, why not just let him be asked? I mean, this is just bizarre.
Well, I know this court doesn't sit for matters of state law, but state law does say that in order to impeach or cross-examine someone about illegal immigration status, one has to prove that, in fact, that witness is an illegal alien. The trial judge said, bring me in some more proof. I'm not going to rely on these two letters saying no immigration status and no records responsive to your request. Bring me an affidavit from a Justice Department official saying that, yes, in every case I've seen that a no record was returned or a no immigration status response was returned, it's reasonably probable that this person is in this country illegally.
You said Illinois law would prohibit a witness being asked, for instance, where were you born? And they say Indonesia or something. How does it happen that you're in Chicago? You couldn't ask that under Illinois law?
Under Illinois law, in order to cross-examine on immigration status, one has to show that in order to use that as a means to impeach or show motivation to curry favor with the prosecution, the defendant has to show
No, I'm not going this motivation okay. and curry, stopping deportation and all that. But the questions I just posed, that you couldn't ask that under Illinois law, and if so, what Illinois law?
If the question, Judge, was meant to serve as a background to a case or something like that, I don't see the problem. But if the questions are meant to inquire as to a person's alienage or immigration status, you can't do that. And I think the policy...
Under Illinois law. What Illinois law is that?
There's three cases in particular, Judge. People versus Clem Wexley. I'm not pronouncing this right, but it's in my brief. Clem Wexley, which in turn cites to People versus Austin, appellate court cases. The potential for harassing a witness who maybe speaks with a foreign accent or has a different skin color or doesn't have an Anglo-Saxon last name is something of concern. Therefore, the state courts require defendants who seek to inquire about immigration status to impeach or show motivation to testify favorably to the prosecution, show that, in fact, such persons are in this country illegally by documentary evidence or otherwise. If this court does find that there was error and in the decision by the trial court to deny admission of this evidence, and if the court finds that the state appellate court unreasonably applied governing confrontation clause jurisprudence to the facts of the case, respondent submits that the error in this regard was harmless. The petitioner, following his arrest, gave a detailed confession And the district court, unfortunately, disregarded much of the trial record in this regard.
Well, wouldn't the remedy then have to be, if we found that this was error on the confrontation clause issue, wouldn't they have to be remanded to have the district court rule on the ineffective assistance claim for failing to move to suppress the statement? It looks like Judge Gottschalk found that it was an involutary confession.
She did, Judge.
In her harmless error analysis.
And that wasn't an independent claim raised. But if the court does remand, of course, those remaining claims would have to be addressed. Now, significantly, there was a suppression hearing in this case. And at that hearing, the petitioner alleged that following his arrest, he wasn't read Miranda, he was given promises of leniency, and he was denied his right to an attorney. The trial court denied this in its entirety. At trial, we had two assistant state's attorneys and a Chicago police detective testify that the petitioner was treated fairly. He wasn't handcuffed to a wall for 20 hours, as the district court found. He wasn't screamed at, as the district court found. He wasn't denied his right to an attorney, as the district court found. In fact, all three of these other witnesses testified that the 20 hours of custody before the confession came out was a product of Mr. Tolliver giving different alibis. Every time they'd come back and talk to him, he'd give a new alibi. First, it was his mother. Second, it was two of his friends. The third alibi is that it was two of his friends and some guy named Pee Wee. They went to check these out. They either didn't check out or they couldn't find these people, so they come back. Finally, after 20 hours, they sat down and said, "What's going on here?" He decided to give a court-reported statement in which he said he was treated fairly, in which he said he was given food and drink, allowed to use the bathroom, and was otherwise not coerced or threatened with the electric chair if he didn't confess, which was one of his contentions at trial. In light of that compelling evidence adduced at trial that was unfortunately not mentioned by the district court in its analysis, we submit that if there were a Sixth Amendment Confrontation Clause error in this case, then the error was indeed harmless under Brecht, as it couldn't have had a substantial or injurious effect on the jury's verdict, especially since that confession entailed details of the crime and under the conditions of the confession, which were not coercive in any event. The jury was certainly entitled to believe the credibility or give credibility to those witnesses for the state. I see I'm running into my rebuttal time. If there are no further questions, I appreciate the court's time and ask that the court reverse and remand for consideration of the remaining claims. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Hendry.
May it please the court, Mr. Iskowich. The district court got it right in this case. And it's, as you all know, it's very rare to have a post-conviction, a habeas corpus petition actually granted, particularly on a murder, an attempt murder case. But the district court had no choice. The state's only eyewitness who identified the defendant was...
I know about the underlying facts. I very much have my colleague Evans's question. Do we even now know Eunice's immigration status?
No, we do not. As a matter of fact...
Why not? Why didn't you or your predecessors in this chain approach Eunice and simply ask him?
Well, first of all, I wasn't the trial counsel in this case.
I don't care whether you were trial counsel. That's why I said you or your predecessors.
The record was already complete at the time that I took the matter up here.
No. The record isn't complete on this question because we're in total ignorance of it.
Correct.
You know, one thing you do is you go to Eunice and ask him for an affidavit about his immigration status.
I don't even know who Eunice is or where Eunice is. What I do know, however, is that the assistant state's attorney, Tomasek, informed the judge at the time, and this is a quote from the record, he said that my understanding here is that he is here with a passport and visa, as he has been in Chicago, New Jersey, and other places, that he is here legally. Now, that's in page 19 of the respondent's brief. Well, if all that's true, then the only thing that they had to do, the state, as part of their petition on the motion in limine, was simply attach a copy of the visa or attach the copy of the passport or whatever.
He said it was his understanding. He didn't see he had a copy
correct.
Of the visa.
Correct. And that's exactly the point. You know, we're in a situation as the defense attorneys. We can't determine what his status is other than going to INS. And INS...
But you can talk to the
you
defendant.
You can go to him, right? The usual rule on collateral attack is if some witness is kept off the stand or if cross-examination is not allowed, you either go to the potential witness and ask for an affidavit about what he would have said had the question been allowed, or you ask for an evidentiary hearing in the federal court and put him on the stand and find out what he would have said.
Well, the statement of defense counsel at the time was that Mr. Yonas would not speak to them. And there's no way...
In that event, you ask the district court for an evidentiary hearing, you get a subpoena, and you question him under compulsory process. But apparently no effort was made to do that.
And no effort was made because the record is closed. The only thing that we can do...
The record is not closed. You ask for an evidentiary hearing. No such request was made, I gather.
No such request was made on my part.
No effort was made to bring in Yunus.
Yes, it was. We did not, could not locate Yunus. Yunus is no longer here. We don't know where Yunus is. So we're in no position.
Does the record in this case affirmatively show that an effort was made to contact Yunus and was unsuccessful?
No. The issue never was raised. You asked the question. I'm telling you the information I have. Mr. Yunus is no longer in this area. Mr. Yunus may no longer be in the country. So we have no idea where Mr. Yunus is.
Let me ask you a question about the harmless error here.
Sure.
It seems like the district judge found that this confession was involuntary as part of her reason why it was that any error here, if there was an error, was harmless. That's what it looks like here.
No, that's not what she found. What she indicated was there was a catalog of issues that dealt with whether or not a jury would have found differently if the matter had been brought up. Among those was, first, he had a trial originally. That trial resulted in a deadlocked jury. This was the second trial he had. At the second trial, the jury indicated they could not reach a verdict. And it was only after 8 hours and repeatedly being told to reach a verdict by the judge that they ultimately made a decision.
Those are not issues in this case. How much time a jury has been out doesn't make any
difference. No, the point is she was dealing with the harmless error issue, and she was bringing up a catalog of things that could have that showed that if, in fact, this issue had been explored, the jury could have found differently.
Well, here, if, in fact, there was a perfectly voluntarily given statement admitted to the jury, a confession of guilt, and if it was voluntary, I think this would be harmless error. The restriction on your cross-examination of this witness. And it looks like the judge in the district court conducted a voluntariness, made a voluntariness determination on the record, which might be contrary to what the state's counsel tells us today, that there was a hearing and the confession was found to be admissible as voluntary.
The statement was admitted, but
I know that. I know
Mr. Tolliver also testified, and he testified to what he was subjected to, which resulted in the confession, so-called, that took place. The 20 hours, the yelling and screaming at him. These things were the things that were brought out before a jury. So the judge in the district court is simply saying...
He didn't believe him.
Well, the jury initially, obviously, couldn't reach a verdict. And that's exactly the point. This was a case...
We're on collateral review of the first trial. We're on collateral review of the second trial. The jury
second
unanimously
trial,
did not believe him.
The second trial, initially, the jury said they could not reach a unanimous verdict.
Look, Judge Evans has already told you this is irrelevant.
I understand. The point I'm making, though, is
our questions.
I'm answering the question, which is, would it have made a difference if, in fact, in the proceedings below, this issue of the confession were something resolved? My point is that the issue of the confession was not the only thing that made this harmless error, or harmful error. What made this harmful error was the fact that we had a situation where a number of errors had occurred. Occurrence witnesses who were there, one of them being a person who was shot, said they never saw the defendant on the scene. The eyewitness himself said, initially when they spoke to him, that he didn't see who did the shooting. Then, days later, he calls up a police officer who had arrested him on a misdemeanor charge and who obviously didn't seek his deportation or do anything with him, rather than the officers who had actually come and conducted the investigation. He goes to this officer, this friend of his, and says, I've seen the shooter, after he went into the store, supposedly, and he saw him for 20 seconds. The point made by
that cuts both ways, though. That shows this witness had a lot of warts that were exposed to the jury, and one more might not have made any difference.
The point is that he wasn't allowed. The defense attorneys at the trial stage were not allowed to ask that question. They were not allowed to explore whether or not this man was here illegally or not. And even the state court said, well, if he's here illegally, you're certainly allowed to impeach him on that. But how could they determine that if they're not going to allow the question even to be answered, even outside of the presence of the jury, whether or not this man is here legally? And if he is here legally, what does the state have to fear by allowing the question to be answered? According to the state's attorney, he had a visa, supposedly he had a passport. Well, if that's true, he could have photocopied it, attached it to his motion in limine to say, well, this is ridiculous to ask him about his immigration status. Look at the documents that he has that they talked about. Look at the documents and tell me why in the world we should go into his immigration status when he's here legally. The fact of the matter is that he was an undocumented alien. And for an alien to be in the United States,
we don't know that that's the fact.
Well,
that's what INS has said. INS has indicated that he was an undocumented alien. Again,
has indicated only that a record search didn't show any information. It has not indicated the INS didn't tell you that he's an alien.
The INS,
if you ask the INS about a citizen, they will tell you they don't have any records.
This is what the INS specifically said. No records have been located establishing that this individual has any immigration status in the United States.
That's the same
agent of the petitioner.
No immigration status.
It's the same response they would give if they asked about you or me or Judge Bauer or Judge Evans.
The fact that it was conceded that Mr. Yonas was born in Morocco. He was not born here.
And there are lots of people who are U.S. citizens who are born
absolutely
in Morocco.
No, but at no time did Mr. Tomasek, although he talked about visas and passports, ever say he's a citizen now.
It would be nice to actually have asked Yonas at some time.
It absolutely would be.
Now,
but
I understand your predecessors tried. But what's frustrating me now is that no effort was made, even in this federal litigation.
And the point I make again is my information is that Mr. Yonas is no longer in this area and may not be in the United States.
Well, did you hire a detective to track him down?
No, I did not.
Did you ask Hewlett-Packard to find him?
No. But the state's attorney.
That's a low blow.
It's only a low blow if Mr. Henry were representing Hewlett-Packard.
The state, however, specifically said, and it's in the respondent's brief, that he had a visa and he had a passport. Well, if that's true,
no, what they said was it is my understanding that he is here with a visa
correct.
And a passport.
Yeah, correct. Well, but if that's
not
true,
an unequivocal statement, since it's my understanding.
It wasn't an unequivocal statement. And the point I'm making is, however, if that is true, why did we even go through this inquiry? Why would they file the motion in limine? They filed it specifically saying, don't allow them to go into this issue. Why is it even an issue? If, in fact, they truly believed or understood or felt that, in fact, Mr. Yonas had legal status here, why are they even filing a motion in limine to preclude going into the issue? Why would they object to even asking him the question? The reality is they knew full well how harmful it would be for it to be brought out if, in fact, he was an illegal alien, and that's why they contested it. They contested it vigorously. The state court judge just simply accepted what they said, that he had a visa, he had a passport or something, and there was no, quote, proof. How do you prove the negative without being able to talk to the witness?
The INS wouldn't know about visas. Visas are not issued by the INS. They're issued by the State Department.
Fine. Then all they'd have to do is make a copy of the visa.
It's not they, right? Your predecessors, representing Tolliver, presented documents from the INS.
Correct.
Whereas if you want to know whether somebody has a visa, you have to present documents from the State Department.
The first mention of the visa was at the hearing on the motion in limine. That's where Mr. Tomasek brought up that his understanding was this.
Understood.
There was nothing mentioned about this initially. The reality is that, in fact, if there were no issue of his citizenship, the motion doesn't even make sense. The motion in limine makes no sense if there is no issue about his status in the United States. In addition, on the harmless error issue, the fact that that a jury was previously unable to convict this man on the same charges, that actually factored into Judge Gottschall's determination. The fact that the jury in this case said that they couldn't reach a unanimous decision prior to the 8 hours of deliberation factored into this case. So you can't say that it's harmless if, in fact, jurors were confused themselves as to the guilt or innocence of Mr. Tolliver twice, on two different occasions. And so being able to bring this information out was critical. Being able to at least ask the question is certainly critical, and that could have resolved these matters. The fact that the state so vehemently opposed it essentially implicitly says they knew there was a problem with his immigration status, and they knew that it could harm their case. For all these reasons, as well as the other reasons cited in my brief, we think that Judge Gottschall got it right. Her decision should be affirmed, and the petition should have been granted and should now be affirmed here.
Thank you, Mr. Andre. Anything further, Mr. Iskowich?
Very quickly. Thank you. I'd just like to clear up a couple of things Mr. Andre said about the harmless error inquiry. First, he said that the shooting victim didn't ever see the shooter. That's because he was shot in the back as he turned out of the store. Secondly, as the court mentioned, speculating about what a jury was or wasn't thinking about whether or not they were confused about guilt or innocence really doesn't have an appropriate role to play in harmless error inquiry. And third, witness Yunus wasn't the best witness. I can't stand up here and say he was, but he did tell police arriving at the scene that he saw the shooters, he saw the victims, he gave basic descriptions of the shooters, a description of the car. 6 days later, one of the shooters comes in. Actually, the shooter comes in. He goes to the police and tells them about it. If there's no further questions, I think this court should affirm and reverse and remand for consideration of the remaining claims. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.